Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Passing Dimes. Really excited for today's returning guest. She grew up playing for Pac-Man, where she has several OVA and national medals. She went on to play for Ryerson, where she's a provincial and national champion and also an OUA All-Star. She went on to play professionally in Sweden, and now she's continuing her education back at Ryerson/TMU. Please welcome back to the show, Lauren Veltman. Lauren, thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I had to look it up. Man, you were one of the OGs where when we left off, COVID having happened yet. So if it's not too much to remember, take me through that last year at Ryerson. I think it was 2021, maybe. You were in like your original fifth year, I think, at TMU/Ryerson. And I think you were becoming an outside hitter. Or I think you were already an outside hitter at that time.
Yeah, I turned to outside in my second year. So I was playing. So first year was middle. And then Dustin threw me on the left side during our like bronze medal game in my first year. And then I kind of just stuck. And then in my fourth year, I kind of merged back into the middle a little bit.
Nice. And I know it might take a little while to recall, but I imagine, I think in your club era, you were like a true middle. I don't think you got to play much outside playing clubs. So how did you catch up at a university level? Like, were you doing extra passing reps? Were you getting squeezed out? Did you just like clubbing down high balls? Like, what was really appealing for you to be an outside?
Well, I know even in like my club days when I was playing middle, like before, well, actually, no, during Libero's, my coach really wanted me to hit the pipe. So he would keep me in the back row a lot. So passing, I kind of got some small passing reps then. But obviously it's a lot different than in university. But I feel like that kind of helped me a little bit, just like the mechanics of it. And then when it came to being at TMU or Ryerson as it was, obviously during preseason, it was a lot of passing. Like a ton of passing. And we also had it set up, since it was my second year, I had Julie Longman as my libero and Janelle Albert as the left side along with me. So whenever we were passing, they took up majority of the court. So they would do it in a way where I was pinched up a little and they were shifted. So it looked like I was still a bit like an option to serve to, but realistically one of them would just come over and take it from me. Hitting, like since I was a middle, like I was so used to hitting like so outside of my body that Alicia would just set me like a little bit inside. And the way I'd come in, like my body is like towards the blockers, but my arm was so out that like, I don't know, it was just a little simpler for me to get some kills because they couldn't line up properly.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. Yeah, because typically outsides are like taught to get their feet to the ball and they kind of hit the ball in front of them, where you were like cutting it off a little bit earlier where maybe the pin blocker couldn't front you properly, right?
That's what I thought. That's what I think that like kind of got my sharp angle from. Because yeah, like I would cut it off like really early. Like I would not be hitting it straight, which I don't know, it was like the best technique, but it worked for me at the time. So I'm like, whoa.
And as that year progressed, I think that was the year that it got shut down pretty late. Like, I think the teams were already at nationals. Or did you guys get stopped sooner? Was that an on-again, off-again year? Or was that a year that got stopped in March?
Yeah, that was my fourth year was the year it got stopped in March.
Okay.
So teams went to the nationals, flew out there, but then they had to fly back. Like, they didn't play at all.
Right. So for you, with all this stopping and starting, is that what made you want to pursue pro so early? Like, obviously, you come from a very athletic family where aunts and uncles are pro athletes. Your sister was already playing pro indoor volleyball at that time. Like, were you in talks with them? Were you in talks with an agent already? Or was it just when the league got shut down, you're kind of like, I'm out of here. It's time to start my career.
Well, I actually did finish, like, my fifth year because there was, like, talk about maybe volleyball happening. So we were having like really just like random, if you can come, you can come practices. And I was doing like my fifth year, like of school. But then about halfway through the semester, like first semester around November, that's when they announced that like nothing was happening. So I did finish school. And then it was like the following September is when I went to Sweden.
So for you, I imagine you still had a ton of valuable game tape, but what was the process in speaking to an agent and getting seen? Because I imagine someone a couple years younger than you, they might not have had meaningful matches where you could still draw from like these provincial and national runs you were going on, and especially was changing positions in university. I imagine you had enough clips, but did you end up using the same agent as your sister did? Did you find somebody new? Was Dustin a big help? Like, how did you find that first deal?
So I actually, I didn't use Kelsey's agent, but she knows someone, like a friend of hers that played at Western with her. Her boyfriend, who actually also played basketball at Western, he became an agent. So Kelsey was able to connect me with him, and I know he is an agent for a lot of other girls that I know, like Sarah Kovacs. I think he's an agent for Courtney Baker. I'm not 100% sure on that one. And like Corey White, he was her agent. So my sister like sent his information my way, and I just messaged him, and he's like, yep, no problem. Like, we'll get it going. Like, so it was pretty easy for me. I was lucky I had that connection.
Did you receive many offers? Like, how do you always weigh this Sweden club versus this club in another league, or where do you want to live in the world? Like, did you have a short list of things you wanted, or were you just looking to take each offer at a time and decide what you wanted to do?
I didn't really put much thought into it. I kind of was just more relying on my agent. I know that's what Kelsey would do. She would be like, you tell me, like, you can tell me the offers, but you tell me which one to take. Right. So that's kind of how I did it. Like, I had a couple of offers come in. I went from Taiwan, and Stephen was like, my agent was like, you know, it's pretty good, but you know, it is a big place to go for your first year, like especially just more how far away it is, language barriers and whatnot. So it was basically him that kind of decided that the Sweden offer was like the best one for me, and he thought that it would be a good, since I was off for a year because of COVID, he knew it would be a good like developing year for me.
Nice. And did you speak to anyone before you go? I think when I looked up your first year roster, Kate Ferguson, who played at Western, was on your team, right?
Yeah, she was.
And did you know her before you got there?
Yeah. So since Kelsey was on Western, I would go visit her a lot. So it was actually really nice to have Kate there. We were talking a lot beforehand. I know she accepted her offer a little bit later than mine. So I was talking to her about it before she fully even accepted, but it was good knowing that she did, because it made it a lot more comforting knowing that she was going to be there. Even though the place, like, I lived in such a small town and everyone speaks English there, so it was really easy to adapt. But for it being my first year, like, I know it can be stressful, and I didn't know how I was going to feel. So it was nice knowing that she was coming with me.
Yeah, take me through just your first impressions there. So you mentioned it's a small town. I think Sweden as a country, they speak English really well, and they speak several languages probably. But yeah, what was it like just lifestyle-wise when you first arrived?
So again, yeah, it was really small. Like, I lived in Ängelholm. I don't know if that's a place people know. But it was like, it kind of gave me like, have you ever watched Gilmore Girls?
Yeah. Sad to admit, but
kind of you know, like, it had like cobblestone pathways. Like, everything is just down one street that you needed, like the grocery store, coffee shops, like an H&M, just everything that like, I know I would need. It's just right down this one street. Yeah. Everyone was like super nice. It's weird. Swedish people, nothing against them. They're very shy. That's one thing I noticed. They're very shy. So when we all first show up, like when you first show up to a team, you expect the ones who've been there to be like very like outgoing and like used to like the environment and being there. But when it's like when we came, they were like, we had to be the ones to be like, oh, like bring up conversations or like, I don't know, initiate things, if that makes sense.
It's just so funny because you grew up in like the Brampton, Georgetown area. And then you go to TMU, which is like a downtown campus near Dundas Square. And then you're in a fairy tale and with people who are like, see this 6'2" athlete walking around and don't want to start conversations with them.
Yeah.
I just looked it up. It looks like there's been Canadians in your club for like several years before you got there, like going back to, I believe Joanne Cross started her career there. Marissa Field played there. Sophia Carparche, Brisebois. Like, was there any mention of that, that they've had good relationships? Natasha Calkins was there, that they had good relationships with Canadians. And that was maybe one thing that they found appealing about your resume, that you could start your career there too.
They didn't really talk about the relationships with them much, but I do know that they did enjoy the Canadians that did come through. So I think that kind of gives them like an appeal towards Canadians. But it's weird because I think the past 2 years, or last year and this year, I don't think they've had any.
So you burned the bridge then.
So apparently I left a bad taste in their mouth. I don't know.
How did you find the level? Because I know you mentioned when you were still kind of picking up the receive side of the game, you had Janelle and Julie there to help you. When you got to Sweden, were you like a primary receiver, or did you feel like they were trying to squeeze you out as well and just make you an offensive threat?
Well, actually, my coach talks about how bad Canadians are at passing.
Oh, like as just a blanket rule?
Yeah, like he's like, yeah, Canadians all suck at passing.
Oh my god.
So for me, like, I actually got moved to the right side because I honestly couldn't keep up with their passing. Like, he had, like, a not, like, a weird passing system, like, a pretty regular one, but, like, obviously some changes compared to what I did in university. And the Swedish girls picked it up so quick. Like, there was 1 week where one girl, I thought she was, like, not that good. And then, like, a week later, she was our star left side. I'm like, what happened? Like, she just picked it up really quickly. I was definitely struggling a bit. I did have some games where I did really well, but it wasn't consistent enough. So our main right side ended up getting injured. So he's like, you know what? We're going to just put you here instead. I'm like, that works for me. I'm fine with not passing.
What's tempo? What was the set? Was it pretty flat and fast, or did they slow it down? Like, how quickly did you get used to the right side?
It almost wasn't fast enough.
Oh.
Like, I found, again, like, since I was in middle, I like a tempo set because I'm just used to going in really quick. And we would have a high ball, and then we had their tempo. Like, I was expecting, like, really fast. So when we started, like, doing some hitting drills, and we're like, okay, if you want it fast, you call gray, yellow, or red. Say red. That'll be fast. And I'm like, okay. So I call red and I start going in, and I am way too early. Way too early. So they had to make like a special call just for me to make it even faster. But they loved their high balls. Loved them.
That's interesting. Like, with you being 6'2", I mean, it's scary now that that's kind of like normalizing a little bit, but I would still say like you're on the longer side. Like, were you playing against other 6'2 athletes, or is it a little bit of smaller league in Sweden?
Definitely smaller. I think a lot of their height comes from their international players. There was like the random middle, obviously, that would be around the same height as us, but they had a lot of short ones too.
Nice. And then how did the season progress? Because again, I don't know much about your club, but I'm just scrolling through Volleybox that it's not unusual for them to be finishing in like the top four of the Swedish Cup or the league. And I believe your year, you guys actually finished third in the league. So was there always expectations that, you know what, we're going to bring in yourself and Kate, and looks like a Brazilian athlete was on the team, like I think a German setter as well. That was it expected that your team was going to do well every year because they were spending money on foreigners?
I think so. I think ever since they won like the first time, it was definitely high expectation for like the whole town. Like, the town thrives off of sports there. So it's definitely a bit of like almost a little bit of pressure there. But I think since they like get like top three every time, like, even if you don't win, it's, like, not a big deal. Like, obviously, you want to win, but they knew that, like, they know that they'll gain experience and more players that will, like, bring them to win at least, like, every other year, maybe.
So. And did you feel with your club that there was, like, a rivalry or anything within the league? Like, do them and, like, Halmstad always seem to play each other in the semis or the finals? Or is there another tough club that you felt like maybe your club supporters got a little bit fired up for a certain match?
Oh, I know we would butt heads with Örebro. That was a tough one. They had a very, very strong American outside hitter. And you know those teams that just seem like they walk on and they're like, oh, yeah, like we don't care about you guys. Like we think we're going to win anyway. Like no big deal. Like snooty kind of.
Yeah.
So I think that made us pretty angry. So I think it was, I don't know if it was the same for them, if they thought the same, but I definitely, every time we played them, I had like a rage kind of.
That's awesome. So what is the league like in terms of travel? What are the size of some of these gyms or venues you're playing in? Like I picture a town, a small town with like cobblestone, like was your gym pretty like small and the fans felt like they were on top of you, or what was like your home gym like?
So the Swedish league is definitely pretty small. It's one of the lower leagues, right? A lot of them, like ours was at, I'm pretty sure it was attached to a school, but it was like a decently sized gym, and it had like pretty high up like bleachers, like not like metal bleachers, like nice ones. So fans were definitely far away enough, so we didn't feel like super close, but there were some that were pretty rough. Like there is one team that they allow in the league. It's actually, they have like a volleyball specific school, like a high school. Their like elite teams will play us in regular season. So that was weird, because that was just at a high school, like a full on high school. There was like almost no seating on that one.
Interesting. Like what was the ceiling height even?
It was decently high. I would say just like a normal gym. Like I was definitely not like a university height type.
Interesting. Another thing you got to experience by playing in Sweden is they handled COVID completely different than Canada did. So was it interesting talking to friends or family back home and maybe we're in lockdown or the season kind of stopped and started or whatever? And you're kind of like, no, this is normal. They seem to have like no restrictions, right?
Yeah, there were some people that were pretty shocked. Like when I arrived and I was talking to my friends, I'm like, yeah, like I got to walk into a grocery store without a mask on. And they're like, what? I'm like, it felt so weird just being able to do that. Like I felt like I was like committing a crime. But when I walked in there, almost next to nobody was wearing them. So I got comfortable to it pretty quickly. But yeah, they treated it like pretty much like a normal sickness. Obviously, if it got really bad, they would shut down some things, but it never got to the point where we were stuck at home, like how we had it here, or we were in complete lockdown. I even got COVID when I was there. Someone got it on our team and it kind of just spread. They really were just like, okay, well, just stay at home for a week and you'll be fine. And me and Kate got it at the same time. And then we had two other roommates, the Brazilian girl, Gabby, and then we had an American, Sabrina. They just left to a hotel. They had a quarantine as well, obviously. But we just stayed at home for 7 days. And the second that 7 days was up, we were right at practice again. Like no second test, no nothing.
Just remembering what we were doing, like we were testing, we were lucky enough to train with the beach team, but we had to test before we could enter the facility. And like there was all this monitoring where it sounds like you guys weren't testing. You had to have symptoms to shut it down. And then when you were, it was just a week, not even 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever I think other centers were doing.
Yeah, like we weren't, like we maybe tested like twice total. And the only reason why we tested the second time was because someone on the team got COVID. So they're like, okay, on this day, everyone come in, we'll just like get tested. And me and Kate, we were like, that was a Friday. They told us to come in on the Sunday. The next day of the Saturday, we were like, oh, I got a little bit of a cough. Like, this is weird. And then going into Sunday, I'm like, Kate, we definitely have it. But we just casually went over there, like, no big deal. We wore a mask during that while we were getting tested. And it was funny. She was actually, we get back, we're waiting for our results. They just said, okay, go home, we'll let you know. And Kate was like, okay, I'm going to go get groceries, like, just in case. And as she's walking to the store, I yell at her, I'm like, Kate! She's like, what? I'm like, oh, no. Like, I didn't want to yell it out. I was like, we got it! we got, don't go to the store. She's like, oh, dang it. Cause now we know we're 7 days and we got to figure out like food. But yeah, it was pretty chill.
So what do you do when you're in a foreign country, you're not allowed to leave? Like, were you just watching movies, reading books, calling people back home? Like the time zone difference is, it's enough that you have to plan your day around it. But I'm wondering, how did you feel a week of not being allowed to play volleyball?
Well, we go to bed very late. We had enough boxed wine to cover us for the week. And I don't know, we actually had like, old mattresses. Like Kate got a new bed during this time, and we had our old mattresses and we put them in front of the couch, in front of the TV, and we just lay on these mattresses and watch movies. We had a couple of marathons. We did Harry Potter. We did scary movie marathons. We once tried to stay up all night. That did not work. We passed out by like 4 a.m. But we thought like, you know, let's try it, because our sleeping schedule was terrible there to begin with. So we're like, if we stay up all day and all night, maybe we'll fix it. But we fell asleep.
It's good that you had Kate. I'm wondering what you would have done by yourself. Probably the same thing, but just not a friend to share that time with.
Yeah. And during that time, one of my symptoms was like no taste and smell. I unfortunately had that. So when I figured that out, Kate was like, okay, we're going to do like a little game. And she filled up little shot glasses of just random things. And she had me like taking shots of them. And one of them, I just like slugged it back, no problem. And I'm like, water? And she's like, Lauren, that was straight vinegar, like a whole thing of vinegar. And I didn't taste it at all.
That's nasty.
And I was like, oh, that's delicious.
When you say your sleep schedule was off, what was your training schedule? I imagine it was a lot of evenings when you guys are playing matches, but when would your team actually train, like that you could have like a later start to the day?
So a lot of the girls on our team worked during the day, and we actually had some girls that were still in high school, like grade 10, 11.
Wow.
So all of our training was either at 4 p.m. or later. So on days we had workouts would start at 4, they'd go to 5, we'd practice from like 6 to 8. On days we didn't have workout, we'd normally have like conditioning, but that wouldn't be till, those days would be from 5 to 6, and then practice from 6 to 9. But yeah, some days it would start at 4, some days it would start like at 5. So a lot of our sleep schedule was, we'd hang out until like almost 1 a.m. with each other, but then in our own rooms, we'd stay up till almost 3, 4 in the morning. And then we wake up at 12 p.m. the next day.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was pretty relaxed.
And coming from an OUA program, a championship program, and winning a national championship, how did you find the level of training? Was it similar? Was it what you expected? Was it more? Like, how did you find, like, being a professional volleyball player? Obviously, like, they took away the class part, and you had to deal with so much free time. But the actual in-the-gym part, how was that comparable?
I found it pretty similar. Like, again, since we were like it is a lower level, I wasn't expecting anything too crazy. But a lot of it felt pretty similar to what like university felt like. The only thing different was our coach was a bit meaner, but in a good way, in a good way.
So that league wraps up. Was there any talks with your agent or with a different club or with the same club that you wanted to return, or experiencing 1 year overseas, you're kind of like, this is good for me, but I'm going to pursue other things?
So for me, it was more, since I went to Sweden originally as left side, and that left side training was cut short because I was moved to right side, that kind of screwed some things up when my agent was looking into my next contract, because I was like, okay, I've done all this training as a right side, and again, the reason why I went here was to develop as a left side, but I was off for a year because of COVID. So he was saying, you know what, I think it would be better to still put you out there as a left side, but you need to do another developmental year. And he's like, and then you'll build from there, and then in a couple of years, that's when you'll be making like the good money. And I'm like, a couple of years? Like, that's not how I wanted this to go. Like, I don't want to take another developmental year. Like, I already did it. And he advised that, like, going out as a right side, it's harder to get, like, noticed as a right side because, again, there's only one on the court, right? You don't need that many. And I knew he had other right sides that he was an agent for as well, that teams that, like, contact him, he most likely probably show them someone else because they've been training right side, like, their whole life. So for me, it was more like, how long, I had to think about, like, how long am I actually going to do this for? Like, how long do I think I can last? And then with me working with the city of Brampton, I was like, this is something that is good and something that I know I can go far in, and it's secure, and that I will forever know I have a job. With volleyball, it's unknown, right? I could get injured, like, anything could happen. So I decided, like, in the long run, it would be best for me to stay home and try and work my way up in my current job.
Nice. Not an easy decision, I'm sure. And then to add one more step to that, you do get a job with a career that you do want to pursue, but then you decide to go back to school. So what kind of happened there that you decided, you know what, I'm going to continue my education? Thanks to COVID, I guess, so you have more eligibility to use. What made you want to cash in your last year?
So for me, it was, I'm kind of in a good position with my job right now. Since I'm on a contract that ends October 20th, I go to part-time in November. So that opens up my days a lot. I only got to work 3 days a week. So it makes it easier. And I figured since my little sister's at school and it's her last year as well, I'd love to have done my last year with her. Because I also have never gotten a senior night. So I was like, oh, it'd be so nice to, like, share that moment with her. So that was, like, a big part in it too. And I knew that if the longer I waited, like, the more and more I wouldn't want to do it, and this just ended up just being the perfect time, because if I ended up getting a full-time job where I am at, like, full-time year-round, then I obviously wouldn't be able to do it. So I'm like, this is the time to kind of pull the trigger on it.
So I imagine when you first spoke to Brittany, she was, like, over the moon. Like, there was no resistance of her being like, no, this is my team, you gotta get in line, like, you're not coming back when I'm a senior.
No, I did have conversations with her. I was like, oh, like, how do you feel? And I was like, would you be okay if I came back? And she's a pretty simple person. She's just like, yeah, why not? Like, that was literally it. Like, I'm sure she's had other thoughts about it, but, like, I know either way, she wouldn't tell me no.
So, did she tip off Dustin? Did you give Coach a call? What was the first conversation saying, hey, guys, like, I'd love to return?
So I actually have had conversations with Brett Haggerty beforehand. Like, since I was coaching an OVA team last year, I would see her a couple of times, and she would always approach me being like, hey, Lauren, you have one more year. What do you want to do with it? And that kind of planted the seed in my head. So we had, like, two or three conversations about it. And I know she mentioned it to Dustin. And then he would have some summer practices. And when I would tell him, like, okay, I'm going to come to this one, he was like, okay, let's meet beforehand. And we had, like, a conversation about how it would work. And I had to tell him my working situation. Like, I'm still working throughout the whole year. So I'd have to work around that. And he's totally understanding. And at the end of that, he's like, so can we announce that you're coming back? And I'm like, whoa, I haven't even registered for classes. But yeah, it was mostly Brett that kind of planted the seed in my head. Like, at first I wasn't really thinking about it, but she kind of made it seem fun again. Not that it was never fun, but, like, it was fun to think about.
And for you, was there anything that either made you nervous or really excited to go back? Because obviously you started your career at TMU Ryerson in 2016. So was there anything where you're kind of like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to fit in with the athletes, like, I only know Brittany, or obviously you had a relationship with Brett and Dustin. Like, was there anything that you're kind of like, oh, I'm not sure? Or were you super excited after that first conversation with Brett?
So when I, like, was having all the conversations before I even registered for classes, I was very excited. Like, very excited just to be back, because I love, like, the university culture in, like, varsity sports. So I was excited about that. But then the second I registered, I had no reservations about like playing. It was more just like, how am I going to handle all of it? I was getting nervous about being overwhelmed and stressed because of three classes, which isn't a ton, but like the homework, working, the volleyball, I was getting nervous about that. But now that I'm in it a little bit, I'm kind of getting used to it a little bit more. Obviously there's some days where I'm like, oh, like how am I going to get here and how am I going to do this? Cause I am living at home still too. So trying to navigate, if I finish work at 3:30 and I have practice at 6, should I drive or should I take the GO train? And it's a lot, but, I definitely had a mixture of both excitement and just being a little overwhelmed thinking about how busy I'm going to be. But so far I'm handling it okay.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe the schedule is helping that, because obviously you guys have exhibition coming up, but I think your regular season doesn't start till late October. So hopefully you get into the routine by then where maybe if you have to miss a practice or you mess up where you're going that day, coach can be a little forgiving, because it looks like, I don't know, this year just feels later to me about when the season starts.
Yeah, like Dustin has already been pretty good about it. They know I can only really make 2 practices a week. And he has been helpful with that. Like at first, normally they wouldn't have 2 late practices, but he added another late practice in the schedule so that I can come to more than one. But when regular season starts, like that's about the time when I start going part-time. So it'll definitely be a little more relaxing, which I'm really happy about. But we do have a lot of scrimmaging coming up. Like we play Guelph this Friday. We go to Queens the 29th for a whole tournament on the weekend. We have people coming to scrimmage us like the weekend after that. So there is a lot going on, even though it's not a regular season.
Nice. And I think one thing that's probably appealing to an outsider to bring a vet like you in who's won nationals and has played professionally is just the leadership you can bring. But I'm curious, in your own opinion, what is your leadership style? Where I don't think you're going to give a Disney-like speech before every practice and really fire the other athletes up. I'm curious, how do you like to carry yourself and go about your business but be helpful to the younger athletes as well?
A lot of times I'd like to say I'd like to just show by example. But I know that doesn't always work. So I like to sometimes insert myself in like certain areas, like, or when Dustin will call us in and like say like, okay, we're going to continue with this, but work on this and this and this. I'll like put in my 2 cents as well, just to be like, guys, we know we can do better than this. Or add something like one of our first practices back, we had to do a passing drill where we had to get 10 quality passes, and it was like a game. So 2 people on one side of the court, 2 people on the other, you're versus each other. Whoever can get 10 quality passes. We did 1 round and I was like, those aren't quality passes. I don't know how we got to 10. We have to just like better ourselves. And I find that since I did have a year of coaching, I feel like it helped me like learn to scout a little bit more. I find I wouldn't have done that in the past when I was there, even as like a veteran. So I find a lot of times in drills, certain drills, people will just go with what's going on. Like, oh yeah, people are calling that a quality pass. It's a quality pass. But now that I'm like, I find I'm seeing things a little bit differently since I've been on the other side. So I'm more comfortable like speaking out in those terms. So I'm hoping that like, that kind of pushes the girls a little bit, and that's my way of like encouraging them and like helping them in a way.
Yeah, that's so cool. Can you expand on that for me and the listeners in terms of who were you coaching? Like obviously it sounds like you had a good experience, but just let us know who you were coaching. And then as an athlete, is it just helping you understand like what success is or what the learning's supposed to be or where the attention's supposed to be? Because I think sometimes athletes fall for, well, I just want to do what I'm good at, versus now you're a coach and you're kind of like, I can maybe see what coach wants this to look like long term, and it doesn't need to be perfect. But just in your own words, yeah, who were you coaching and what did that skill now apply to you as an athlete again?
So I was with Middleton Edge. I was the 15U girls steel coach. So there's 2 15U teams. There's 15U Rush and 15U Steel. I was for the Steel team. It was weird how I ended up getting that job. They had like 50 girls try out. for the 15U team. And I get a call and they're like, "We don't want to cut this many people. We want to start a second team. Will you coach?" And they're like, "We have to know by like tomorrow or we're cutting girls the next day." So I don't know when I joined. But for me, that experience was like pretty insane because I've never coached before in my life. Like I was just trying to go based off of drills I've learned in the past. And I'm like, okay, well, they're 15. I have to remember like what was I like at 15. But also when I was 15, I was more on the premier side and this team was more on like the Trillium side. So I was trying to figure out that balance. And then trying to figure out like, okay, what kind of coach do I want to be? Like, do I want to be like the nice understanding coach? Like, oh, it's fine. Or do I want to be like, I'm going to yell at you, coach? I think I found a little bit of a mix. I definitely did yell at them. But some of the things that I like noticed that I think that I definitely want to try and like put into being an athlete again is just, again, they are like focusing on things that like maybe I'm doing a drill that I hate. And I absolutely hate it because I know I'm not good at it. It's just to do it. Because I've definitely had, it sucked when I would tell the girls, oh, we're going to do this. And I get the, oh. You know? And I'm like, well, realistically, like, you guys are bad at it. So we're going to keep doing it until you're good at it. And it was nice watching them, like, flourish and seeing, like, my drills and, like, them maybe being poor at something at the beginning, like watching it really like improve, like by the time we got to provincials. So I feel like that's something I definitely need to take a little more seriously in my own, like training. Like obviously there's some things that I'm not going to like to do, but I, as I'm like getting older too, like you have to realize like you're not going to be good at everything. So you're going to have to use that or like, keep training in a way and just do what you can.
Nice. So with you back at TMU, is this maybe a chance to be a development year and you would pursue pro one more time? Or are you saying that you're never going to return and this is about you getting a senior night and playing with a sibling and then going to join the real world? Or are you kind of saying, oh, never say never. We'll see how this year goes.
Part of me feels like I won't go overseas again. Just because where I'm at in life and like what I want to do full time, like with my job and everything. But I don't want to say I'm going back just for like those little things, like the senior night and playing with my sister. Like for me, there's still a part of me that feels like I'm not done with volleyball and whatever that might be. If I'm not going overseas, I'm not going overseas. But even when I wasn't playing, like my year off, like I was doing tournaments and playing even just like rec beach volleyball and just like getting myself into anywhere I can. Cause like, I don't want to be mushy, but like my heart's telling me like, okay, you can't stop yet. And knowing that I had that 1 year of eligibility, I just didn't want that like hanging over my head the rest of my life. And knowing that I still can do it and like my body is able, and I've never had any serious things happen to me injury wise. I was like, you know what? Like, let's just put, since I never had that last year, like, let's just put it all out. Last one, big one, and have like some real competition since I haven't had it in a year now.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's so cool to hear that, well, you're playing at the highest level we have in our country, right? So it's a chance to play at the highest level. You're still getting better. I imagine that's a lot of competitive juices to replace if you didn't choose to play this year. But I'm wondering, with that approach, when you go to practice, do you notice that that's helping you play like free? Like, did you always have this attitude, or did you notice that like maybe there's stuff that you're a little bit more patient with or a little bit more forgiving than maybe when you came in as a first or second year?
I would say so. I mean, I try to like still like be a little bit hard on myself in some cases, but at the same time, like I'm trying to keep up like that competitive nature, but also trying to just enjoy the moment. like you said, like being free, kind of. I don't know if I'm totally answering that question properly or if I understood it properly.
No, it just sounds like maybe your mindset has progressed a little bit based on like the experiences you've had of being a pro player and a coach that, but I'm not saying that you're not giving it your all, or you're not being demanding. It just sounds like maybe your career has shifted maybe from when you first entered as like a 18 or 19 year old to what you've experienced, right?
Yeah. And I also feel like for me, like going back to, like, I love the program at TMU. And I feel like for me, like there's definitely like the past couple years, like they've definitely been a different team. So me coming back, I'm really hoping that it can just help like develop them, because I want to see success in the future.
Yeah, this has been great. Thanks for coming back on the show and catching us up with everything you've been up to. One thing we've tried to make a tradition on the show is just to tell a funny or unique story. So obviously you progressed, you played pro, now you're back playing university. I imagine something odd or funny happened along the way, and I was hoping you could share one more story before we let you go.
Okay. Well, I've been thinking about this, and a part of me is like, oh man, I have nothing funny. And I've had two ideas, and I was like, which one should I tell? But there's one, and this goes back to OVA days. Okay. I was 16. This is more of a, I cried about it then, but it's funny now. So this is when I was playing middle, but they wanted me to play in the back row so I could hit pipes. It was second day of nationals. I think we were in Calgary. We were somewhere out there, and I was playing in six, and we were losing. It was only the second day, so it was fine. Wasn't a big deal, but we were losing against this team, and they just needed one more point, and I'm trying to play the best defense of my life, being some lanky giraffe that doesn't know how to use her limbs in six back. And they roll the ball right into the pot, and I push with all my might to try and dive for it. And as I did, I hyperextended my toe, my big toe, okay? Not a big deal, right? No. I was screaming bloody murder to the point where I had people coming up to me asking me if I broke my leg. And all I did was hyperextend my toe, and it hurt so bad to the point where my coach was like, oh my goodness, like we got to get you checked out like right away. So the girls on my team, like run, grab a wheelchair, run it over to me. I'm lying on the floor with my leg in the air. People still thinking like, oh dang, like she did something to her leg. She snapped it. It's broken. It's just my big toe. And our coach drives me and my dad to the closest children's hospital just to get a quick x-ray. At that time, he has to drive back to coach the next game. And they tell me like, yeah, you're fine. Like you just hyperextended it. But since we got dropped off at this hospital, I had to walk all the way back from the hospital on my hyperextended toe to all the way back to the arena. And then I played the next game. So it was all fine, but it was so dramatic. And a scary, I felt like I like ripped my toe, but it was just, I just extended it too far.
I'm glad you can laugh about it now. And I'm curious, what was the first impression of your teammates when you walk in and you're like, oh, I just walked like, I don't know, a mile or however far it was to get back to the facility?
Well, they were actually currently in the game, and we had like a girl who was originally like a DS playing left side, but one of our left sides playing middle because we were a really small team that year. This is when I was playing for Georgetown Impact. And once the game was done, I kind of like walked up to them and they're like, you were just like acting like you were on your deathbed. And now I just like walk in. They taped my toe like so that it was bent downwards so that it would stay like that even if I pushed off. And I'm like, yeah, guys, I'm fine. Like, when's the next game? And they're like, what the heck? Like we brought you a wheelchair. And I'm like, yeah, it's fine.
Oh, that's a good one. Thank you for sharing that. Even though I'm sure it's embarrassing to look back at the time, but I'm glad we can laugh about it now. But yeah, it was awesome. I saw the post and I was excited to see you're back at TMU, and I knew there was a story there. So thanks for coming on and filling us in so we could get caught up on your story, and best of luck this season.
No problem. And thanks for having me.